kind of a slow dance morning, huh?
I just was, you know, when I, you know, the Righteous Brothers was, they were always one of my favorite groups.
Yeah.
And this is one of their all-time greats. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And listen, with all the other things that we're dealing with, and this debt ceiling debate and argument that we hear every year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like the little boy crying wolf, Sandy, that it's always every year, it's the same thing. Got to raise the debt ceiling. They've grown accustomed to it, and we just raise the debt ceiling.
Well, you know, it's a little bit like that nuclear bomb button where it's every once in a while people talk about pushing it, but we know that hopefully
you can't push,
you can't push that button. Well, that's the same. That's the problem with this whole national.
Ceiling.
Well, the freezing of the and basically going over the brink with respect to our obligations. You know, not increasing the national debt, therefore not possibly being able to service the principal or the interest payments due on our national debt, essentially going into default, is a nuclear button. And Janet Yellen, I heard her on the radio today. She's talking about, well, it would be chaos, financial chaos, mayhem, whatever. Well, we ought to get really explicit about what it would be. And what it would be is it would basically put the American dollar at risk, at serious risk of falling off of its throne in terms of being the world currency. And the American dollar, being the favored world currency, is a very, very important element of the strength of the American economy. And if the dollar lost that status, and one of the reasons it has that status is the absolute stability and desirability in the world of investing in American treasury bonds and treasury instruments. It's the safest investment in the world. And it's also the one that will pay money back to you on a reliable currency basis. So you'll get back a reliable currency that's not volatile, and you can invest in these federal instruments. Well, you know what? We default once on that, and we've immediately lost that safe status. And losing that safe status would lead almost directly to the loss of the American dollar as the as the world currency.
So, Sandy,
and I can only tell you that that's worse than mayhem for the U.S. Economy and for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. That is a worst-case scenario.
So there's another part of this, and is it coincidental, that as you've always said over the years, cutting taxes, cutting taxes, cutting taxes.
Yeah.
It puts us behind the eight ball. There's the resources that are necessary to pay our bills are less and less and less, right?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we're talking now about this federal deficit and the federal debt, and what we aren't talking about is increasing taxes, is a profound testament to what it is that goes on in Washington. We had the Trump tax cut during a boom. We cut our taxes during a boom when there was a time when we could have been collecting tax revenues to pay off debt. We could have had a surplus like Bill Clinton had during his period. But no, we decided to live for today, to get higher on the hog. We were living high on the hog. We had a hot economy, and it wasn't hot enough, apparently. And so we decided to damn our grandchildren and great-grandchildren, we're going to live it up today kind of a thing. We cut taxes. And so far, over the last 50 years, tax cutting has been sort of a one-way ratchet. And when we cut taxes, and then we have to start paring back government. We cut taxes, and then when we get a recession, we got to start paring back government. And so this one-way ratchet has fooled us into thinking that our current tax structure and our current tax rate is a sustainable operation, and it's not. And the New York Times has proven that by showing how much we would have to cut a whole bunch of programs in order to sustain a balanced budget, given the revenue stream we've got. So, you know, we should be rethinking entirely how we spend our money and what we spend our money on. And certainly first and foremost on that, we'd have to look at our defense budget because it is such a huge part of our budget. But we should also be looking at how we're delivering value to Tom, Dick, and Mary. And we should also be including in that and calculus of how much we spend at the government level, we ought to be including in that how much we spend for healthcare in this in the United States, because now healthcare is like 18% of our GDP. It's really as necessary an expenditure as taxes. The fact that we all have to have health insurance is really comparable to all of us paying higher taxes as we would to some extent if we had healthcare for all. And so we ought to be re-examining our economy, and in particular, including within that calculus, the cost we have for healthcare.
Let's go to Terry from the Northwoods. Hey, Terry, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
You don't mind me backstepping to the age thing?
No, about, go ahead.
Walter Mondale knew he was cooked when during the debate that Ronald Reagan said, "I'm not going to use my opponent's youth and inexperience against him." And Walter Mondale said later on that he knew with that comment, that zinger that Reagan shot at him, that that was the end. There was no way that he could topple Reagan. Then I had a second point, but about the Barack Obama and his aide said to him one time, I don't know how the conversation come up, but it was about the exploits of the administration. And Barack said, "Well, people know that, don't they? You know." And the aide said, "No, Barack, you need to brag. You got to learn how to brag. Every time a Republican gets near a microphone, they're bragging. So you got to Joe needs to learn how to brag like Barack." Brag about what they've done for
hey,
the
Terry,
people.
Terry, so you're saying age is not an issue?
No, not to me. He's got a good surrounding aides, you know, people that work in the administration, very competent people, you know, name them. The Sullivan guy, the Tony, was it Tony Blinken, Secretary of State? Secretary.
But you still see, I mean, he'll be 82.
Well, you know,
if he's reelected.
Well, Terry, actually, you're sort of making my case, though, that when we elect a president, we know we're electing a team, and that the broad policies of an administration are implemented through and probably created by members of the team, and you know, the president is the buck stops there, but he's the captain. And so my only point is that based on polling and just based on superficialities, we've got to explain away, at least you have to explain away Biden's age. And incidentally, when Ronald Reagan made that statement, he was 10 years younger than Joe Biden. So the issue is there. It's an elephant in the room. My only point is that I think Biden could do his party and his administration a real service and the country a service by starting a process right now for figuring out who his successor is and anointing that person for the next campaign.
Well, you know, normally that successor is the vice president. It's always been the vice president. So I'm not one who is saying that I think Kamala Harris is the best qualified, and that I would feel comfortable. And I know this is going to tick off some people, you know, to become the president of the United States. She's just not prepared for that.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Terry?
No, yeah. They've made her out to be a tarred and feather as being incompetent.
I'm not talking about what they – I'm just – saying based on what I've seen and heard of her, is she really the person that should be the next person up?
Well, I would say this, that a lot of this has to do with It might be her personality and the way she presents herself. It also might be that she hasn't been given assignments that allow her to bloom, right? So, you know, one assignment was a bit of a fool's errand, like go to the border and solve the border problem. Because
yeah.
That's as close to an insoluble problem as we've got. And so, you know, that might have been, in a way, the kiss of death in terms of the assignment that she got. But I just think that if we really were a forward-looking and very dynamic party, the Democratic Party, that we would be dynamically involved with proactively attacking this issue and demonstrating both what a great job Joe Biden has done, and including the fact that he's started this process of having a successor and not necessarily running for a second term.
Terry?
I agree. But there's name recognition. that's always the challenge, name recognition.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. And we've got to find someone who can get that. But, you know, the earlier that happens, and a lot of times name recognition can come out of processes that are start out as being sort of notorious, right? Ones that are earth-shaking. The campaigns that have had 12 candidates with a bunch of no-names, at the end, when the candidate is selected, it usually is someone who we now recognize the name of, right?
So, you know, Terry, man, thank you very much for the call, man. Really appreciate it. Cassandra, hang on. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let's go to the phone lines. And Cassandra from Middleton. Good morning to you, Cassandra. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, hi, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. You know, you are speaking about Kamala Harris, our vice president, and Sandy, he is being very kind regarding Kamala Harris's leadership potential, but I will just have to say it's just not there. She is just not ready for the job, and from many of the reports that I've read from a lot of the newspapers and other social media sites is that she just does not want to read the reports that her staff offers her. So when she attends press conferences and meetings, that she will be able to speak on the issue intelligently instead of using a bunch of word salad sentences. And if you recall, during the primary, she spent $5 million and she did not win a single delegate. She does not have a base. But Earl, I would just like to end with this, and I'll end quickly. I don't think Joe Biden's age is going to be an issue during the election. I think it's going to be the asylum seeker crisis, or what they're calling a humanitarian crisis, which that's something I don't buy. I was born and raised in Chicago. I am not a Wisconsin native, and I have family members in Chicago. And the black community, they are absolutely livid with Lori Lightfoot. And as you know, she was defeated. The new mayor coming in, he is not being responsive to the black community. Why is it that poor working class whites, blacks, are going to have to take on the responsibility of funding asylum seekers? Because the federal government, they are not reimbursing the cities, the cities at full capacity. New York City is $4 billion over budget. Chicago is soon going to be over budget. That's going to be the real issue, and many of the black leadership are going to find themselves out of office. And Earl, I'll let you speak on that. There's a lot of undercurrents going on with the black community, and they are not happy with the black leadership. And I think that's going to be the story of 2024.
Well, so hang on. So, you know, I mean, black leadership in the city of Milwaukee, black leadership in Illinois and other places. You know, the problem with the asylum seekers is both Democrat and Republicans, and the fact that they have not been able to come to an equitable and sensical way to address what it really is needed in this society, and that's people to come here and take jobs that are open and available. And so we can't, here's what I don't understand, Cassandra. The answer can't be lowering the age for children to work, which is what's happening. That's what people are doing, as opposed to addressing and taking care of what the issues are at the border.
Well, and there's one other thing element to what Cassandra's saying, which is the assumption that immigrants cost the federal government tax money, and that it therefore is a drain on Tom, Dick, and Mary. And I don't think the economic studies suggest that at all. I think that, and I'll do some homework on this, and on Friday I'll have more knowledge about it. But my understanding is that immigrants, first-generation immigrants, the Mexican immigrants, even the illegal immigrants who reside in this country with, you know, aliens without having achieved a green card status, are a net positive to the economy with respect to tax flow and costs. So, you know, we like to suggest these things, but I think we're doing it without a factual basis. And, you know, I'm asking the question right now. I'm suggesting that it's my belief, based on some things I've read, that it's not fair to assume they're a drain. And I'll have more knowledge about that on Friday.
Cassandra?
Sandy, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. When people are hurting, and we are in a recession, even though our government does not want to admit we are, people's pocketbooks are squeezed. They are paying more, and they are getting less. And if you add that factor into, you know, them being financially squeezed during the economy, and then you're bringing in a group of people who are adding an additional strain on resources, well, of course there's going to be a problem.
Well, that's my point, Cassandra, though. That you just made an assumption there about an additional strain on resources. The fact is that we have robust job growth, not in manufacturing, but in fact, the numbers, manufacturing job growth is good. It's there, but it's not as robust as the other service areas. But we have a hardcore search on for jobs in the service industry and in the industries that are provided immigrants, by migrants. I just think we shouldn't make assumptions like you just made without having a factual basis for it, because my perception is that based on some actual studies done, that these people are not a financial drain, okay? We like to suggest they are, but I think you're conflating inflation, the problem of inflation, and suggesting somehow that it is related to this other problem.
Resume this conversation in a month after Title 42 is lifted, and then you
Cassandra,
tell me how the American people react.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare. But it's sad, she doesn't love me now. She's made it clear enough, it ain't no good to pine. She wants
all right,
to
welcome back. It is Herman's Hermits.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can didn't know I knew that, did you?
Well, yeah. It's one of the few British groups who decided to sound British.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let's go to CJ. CJ, thank you for holding. CJ.
Well, he put his phone down.
All right, so let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Earl. Morning, Sandy. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that, especially once we get money out of politics, which is the biggest problem that we have, of course, in our whole political system, and why it is that we the people don't have a voice. Because if you look at the statistics that are out there, all the things on gun safety, people want gun safety. Everything that's there, but the politicians are not answering to we the people because they have lobbyists and they have campaigns that they have to get ready for. Second, shame on the Biden administration for not actually showing what Kamala Harris can do. They have basically neutered her. She was a great senator for California, and she was a progressive senator for California, and they've made her more into kind of a
character,
a giggle machine, I guess you'd say. And I really feel bad about that, but I think that she should step down and become the Attorney General of the United States because she was an excellent Attorney General here in the state of California as well. And then bring someone in like a Michelle Obama or someone like that as a replacement for it. As far as some of the callers that call in, I am really, really sick and tired of the CJs, the Cassandras, all these people that are giving anecdotal stereotypes and, dare I say, things that are the perception maybe of people out there but are not the truth.
So Tom, Tom, what we do on civic media is open the conversations to everybody. And,
no, I get that. But I would ask that they actually, like Sandy's doing, Sandy said he's gonna go and research and look it up. These people basically get an email from a thread of propaganda and they call up and they say, oh, this is what everyone is saying in the black community, or, oh, this is what everyone is saying about, you know, Joe Biden or whatever it might be. And it's like there's no facts behind what it is that they actually say. These are all innuendos and things that fit a narrative that is not necessarily true. We should be focusing on is more about the $64,000 that Sandy has talked about the traditional Tom, Dick, and Mary household, where, you know, what is the solution for these people? They're not going to make it. We don't have enough in minimum wage. We don't have enough. We also have a illegal employment problem in this country, not an illegal immigration problem, or illegal immigration issue in this country. It's illegal employment. I'm just getting tired of people calling up and saying, "Oh yeah, this is what it says, and this is a fact." But yet they don't even back it up with a fact. They don't even back it up with anything. But the other guy called last week from West Dallas saying, "Oh, I have to check my email to get back to you to show that Milwaukee pays more or pays less than what they actually get back." Like they're when that's not true.
So,
Urban Milwaukee said that. I mean, it just gets a little frustrating. I'd love to have Chris Larson back on the show. I wasn't real impressed with what's her face,
Senator Taylor,
last week. Senator Taylor, because I think she does come from her own
Chris Larson,
point of view.
Chris Larson is going to be on the show, so I've reached out to him. He's
good.
He's just getting back from Taiwan, so
okay.
Anyway.
All right, cool. It's not my show. It's your show.
Actually,
these people were to back it up with facts.
Two
things, Tom, that you poked there. One of them was this idea of the people responding to money and not the electorate. I saw an interesting slideshow that was presented with Venn diagrams. You know those circles and how they intersect, and they show the intersection, the common points. And one of the ones they showed was what the people poll and say they want was one circle, and what it is that the politicians they elect focus on and accomplish, and the intersection of those two circles was just a sliver. There is very little coincidence between what it is that the people seem to want when they are talked to in polling and what it is that gets accomplished in Congress. And you can see it with respect to some very prominent issues. Gun control, it pulls one way, and yet the results are another. Choice with respect to women's choice pulls one way. And
immigration.
Immigration, same thing. So, you know, you can only attribute that to the dark money and dark policies created in darkness, because the bright light of the people is not getting accomplished. And the second part was a brief conversation I had last week with a plumbing contractor that came to my house, and I'm confident that this contractor was a Republican, and we started talking about policy, and he started talking about people who were not paying their utility bills, and that morphed into the fact that people who don't pay their utility bills probably can't because of the, and we talked about the median income and how people are living paycheck to paycheck, and we didn't get very far into the conversation until he said, you know, that's me. I live paycheck to paycheck. You know, it's hard for me to save money. You know, we have health care. Then he described the health care phenomena with his wife who'd had a brain tumor and an aneurysm 10 years ago. And he had to sell off all of his assets because his insurance topped out. And he suffered a huge consequence. And he had to agree that countries that provided health care for all were doing a much sounder thing. I think if we start talking to people like that contractor and others about the real things that are going on in their lives, will have much more traction. And those Venn diagrams will start looking much more like they're congruent.
All right. CJ is back. CJ, go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call again. I do have facts. This is from the Congressional Budget Office. Every illegal alien costs our system, whether it's health system, education, $10,000 a year.
Okay, so hold on. Let me ask you. How can each illegal immigrant cost $10,000? I didn't know that they were getting health care.
Why don't you ask the city of Chicago and New York, who are crying for help now?
No, I'm asking you. Hold on. I know that if I go to the hospital, they ask me for my identification. They ask me for my insurance card before they even do anything. Are you telling me that illegal immigrants walk right into the hospital and get full care without having any identification and all those things, CJ? Is that what you're saying? The facts, according to your
this
facts?
This president.
No, address what I just said.
Well, no. Let's just let's just roll these numbers out, though, CJ. They don't make sense. You say there are 3 million illegal immigrants. They're each costing $10,000 apiece in health care. Do you know what that number is?
No, in all aspects. That's education, health care, our system.
Well, then what kind of taxes? Well, wait, though. What kind of jobs and taxes are being paid by those groups? You have to look at both sides of this. My understanding is that California and the other places have done an analysis of this, and the taxes being paid by this cohort are actually substantially in excess of any costs that they're bearing. So these people aren't all unemployed, you know. I mean, that's a problem. They might be illegally employed, but most of them are not unemployed.
And taxes are being taken out of what they make.
Yes.
Sandy?
Pardon me?
Raise the issue with the Congressional Budget Office. That's what they say it costs our entire system, whether it's health care, education, and, Gavin Newsom's done a great job destroying California, and you want to let him do that to the country.
Well, the budget office isn't counting how much revenue that is realized. They're saying that's what the cost is. What's the revenue side?
They aren't employed yet, Sandy.
That's not true.
That's what it's costing our
Well, that's not that isn't true, CJ. There are not 3 million unemployed immigrants in this country. They might be illegally employed, but they aren't unemployed.
The ones that came across since Biden became president.
Oh, those
5 million.
Ah, and those people are on unemployed. What? Do they have a special tag on their ear that says when they came over and why they're unemployed? Because I don't think that cohort is necessarily achieving a different outcome than the cohort that came over before Biden.
Well, I'd love to see your statistics on Friday, because if you research it like you say you're gonna, that's what the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says each illegal costs America. So 6.5 million since this president took office. Run those numbers, and we're going to sustain this.
So this
guy is a disaster, and you say he's doing a great job.
No,
Kamala Harris
now wait.
Great on her knees.
Now wait a minute. No, nobody heard. Nobody has said that there's a great job being done on the border situation. I don't think the administration would even claim they're doing a great job. I think the border situation is a serious problem. They're sending 1,500 troops down to the border next week. So
as Donald Trump sent 5,000 when he first got in. Oh, he's gone. Okay. Let's go to Dave from Mequon. Hey, good morning, Dave. You say what?
Hey, good morning. Really quickly, so I think that CJ might be referencing to the fact that California as a state last year expanded the Medi-Cal. That's the state, kind of like the Medicare we have here in Wisconsin. They expanded it to illegal immigrants that I think totaled up almost 300,000 people. So basically, you have now citizens within the state of California paying for people that are not legal citizens in California. And so, that doesn't make any sense.
So, Dave, let me ask you something. I know what, hang on. So we've still got Tom from L.A. who lives out in L.A. on the line. And what kills me is people, he lives there. And so if anybody can speak for the people who live there, I think Tom is in a much better position.
I think it is true that the Medicaid is provided in various states to people who might have illegal alien status. We do have a problem in the United States of what do you do with sick people, and are we going to let typhus reign? Are we going to have death on the streets, or what do you do? So we used to have charity hospitals who would bring people in, and that's why most of the hospitals in America were related to religious institutions in the 1950s. Now we don't, but we still have an obligation to serve people who enter the emergency room who are sick, and some of those people are illegal immigrants. But some of those people are American citizens too. So, but the question really comes down to the economic balance. I mean, if we're going to talk about costs and not the principle of people who aren't citizens getting assistance, We need to evaluate this question of whether this immigration problem is actually a net drain financially on the American economy, and I'm just not certain that it is.
Well, better yet is all these decades, both Democrats and Republicans should fix it.
Yeah.
Okay, just to point the finger at Joe Biden when this has been an ongoing situation for decades under different presidents is what's at the issue. Dave, hang on. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, I'll give you a chance on the other side. But again, to somehow think that this is Joe Biden's issue, this is Joe Biden's problem, this has been, a continued ongoing problem because Democrats and Republicans can't fix it. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let's go back to David from Mequon. Go ahead, David.
So really quickly. So obviously, Governor Newsom is the governor of the most populous state in the United States. And what you're seeing in California is kind of like going to be for the rest of the United States, where you literally have the taxes in California are the highest of any state of all 50 states. You're now starting to see a huge net migration of legal U.S. citizens moving out of California because the state is now raised taxes so much, they're actually in a huge deficit. They're, I think, $22 billion or so. And it's because they've expanded all these different various income programs and other things, and they've upped the minimum wage. And that, unfortunately, a lot of people think, well, if you increase minimum wage, that's going to make things better. Unfortunately, the smaller mom-and-pop stores are the ones that have to pay that out. And they're not able to compete against a larger entity which can't afford it because it can
So then David, because of that, the working people should continue to suffer with wages that they can't afford.
Well, and one other,
that's basically what you're saying.
One other thing, the out-migration from California, I think, is very, very much attributable as well to the cost of real estate in California and the remote work environment that was created during the pandemic. So the pandemic created a hockey stick curve upward movement in the movement out of California. And much of that had to do, I believe, based on the cost of living in California. And the cost of living was the primary difference there is the cost of real estate, which is off the charts higher than the rest of the country. And people were moving to states that had much lower real estate costs with amenities that they found attractive. So I think we can conflate data, but we can't necessarily attribute cause to them. And so that's the only question I would have about what you're saying here, Dave. For instance, the minimum wage affecting Tom, Dick, and Mary, small business, that's always been the argument. But the fact is that the people who work for minimum wage, the large number of them, work for organizations like McDonald's and very big organizations. So, and I'm not sure that Tom, Dick, and Mary are the ones who are complaining about those businesses are the ones complaining about minimum wage.
I would add to this, Sandy. Then why is it the fact that black unemployment, where you do have minimum wage where it's $15 an hour or more, why is it exponentially high? And why would it be high in Chicago or New York or, you know, Los Angeles?
Repeat that, Dave.
Okay, so my question is, if minimum wage was supposedly going to be, you know, that's a good thing, then why is the unemployment rate so high in the cities that have minimum wage where you have, you know, $15, $16, $17 an hour for minority groups.
Hey, David, $15 an hour in Chicago is you know, that's not middle class.
At 2,000 hours a year, and that would be most hourly wage workers don't work 2,000 hours a year. Most of them are being asked to work 3,400 hours a year, so they don't qualify for benefits. But at 2,000, that's $30,000 a year after tax, probably 27. I mean, we're not talking a living wage there, Dave. So you're not fully employed if you're working at a minimum wage at $15 an hour. That's not full employment. That's underemployment. And I'm not sure. You're making an assumption that that minimum wage is the pathway towards employment for the unemployed black in the cities of major cities. And I don't know. I think that's an assumption that's not correct.
Well, since I live in Milwaukee and I know a lot of black people who work those minimum wage jobs, who can't move, can't get anything, can't afford, can barely keep a roof over their heads, let alone food and clothing and transportation. Let's stop talking like, you know, $15 an hour is a panacea. It's not.
All right. So you're conceding the fact that minimum wage does not work.
No, Dave.
No, minimum wage, the problem with minimum wage is that the marketplace is what needs to set wages, right? And we've got too many businesses in the United States who began to base their business model on paying minimum wage, and we've got too many people in the economy who we have deemed to be employed even though they are underemployed with minimum wage employment. I think the real weakness you're pointing out here is not a weakness in minimum wage. You're pointing out a weakness in America's current version of capitalism, where we haven't set up a system that takes care of people so that a minimum wage would be adequate. If you earn $15 an hour effectively in Germany, you'd live in a far different circumstance than if you were in $15 an hour in Chicago.
Again, you're stating the government is the solution to this rather than the actual.
No, I'm not saying their solution. I'm saying that we've got without the government isn't the one employing these people at $15 an hour, and the government isn't the person who's going to employ them at any rate. What we have is an economy that's not fully employing people at full employment levels for whatever reason.
So the government did step in decades ago, Dave, and create the minimum wage. Why? Because the same thing was taking place when they decided to create a minimum wage. The minimum wage in the state of Wisconsin is still $7.25 an hour. Even though they pay 15 in some places and 12 in many others, you can't say that that's an acceptable, you know, rate for people to somehow live off of in 2023. It's not.
I didn't say that that's something acceptable as far as paying is concerned. It's when minimum wage is basically an entry level job.
I keep hearing that, but people working them aren't entry level workers.
What I'm saying is, okay, so this is where
we have. We got to go. We're done. Thank you, and thank everybody for making the show go. Thank you, Sandy. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
See you Friday.
You know.